Quick shout out to our sponsor, Bruce's Cafe and Wynyard. Terrific food, great coffee, great staff and service. Do yourself a favour. If you've got 10 minutes today, you're in the area, pop in, have a coffee, tell them Mike sent you.
Hi, it's Mike here from Better Off Dad. Next time you want to catch up with friends for a few drinks in a prime location, head to Buttons Brewing in Ulverston. Buttons Brewing is a family-owned brewery producing small-batch beers for the people of Tasmania's Northwest. Not only do they do tasty beers, but they serve them at their own bar and restaurant, along with burgers, pizzas, live music, and laughter every weekend. You are listening to Better Off Dad, a podcast featuring three guys with 10 kids between them stumbling their way through dad life. I'm Mike, an American voiceover guy trying to make these idiots sound professional. So here are your hosts, Shannon, Nathan, and James.
Welcome to Better Off Dad. I'm here with my regular co-host, Shannon. We're missing James today. James is at work. He saw a good opportunity to earn some more money, which he doesn't really need. So he's out there. With us today is a very special guest. This guy, where do I start? He made his AFL debut in 1990, drafted from the Burnie Football Club, played 244 games for the Richmond Tigers. He's a former CEO of the AFL Players Association. Since 2009, he's been the CEO of the Richmond Football Club. In that time, he's experienced three flags and built a business model, which is the envy of every other club in Australia. He's a proud Tasmanian, and most importantly, he's a proud dad of three. Welcome to Better Off Dad, Brendan Gale.
Yeah, g'day, Nathan. Good to be with you, mate.
Yeah, look, we really appreciate your time, Brendan, today. We know you're a busy man. How's dad life, mate, in these very uncertain times we're living in?
Oh, gee. Wow. In these times, if I can be really frank, it's really, really tough.
Yeah.
We've actually got four kids. We're a host family to a young Indigenous boy. There's a group of five or six students at the school my son goes to on scholarship, and so they rely on host family. So he's from Kununurra up in the Kimberley.
Oh, fantastic.
So we've had him for the last 2 years. He comes from Kununurra, a new city, a new school, a new family, and he's basically been locked away. So
yeah, wow.
So it's been tough, mate. It's been really tough. But, you know, we're a mixed bag. My oldest, she's a bit of a self-starter. She's highly motivated. She's in year 12, which ordinarily is a year of, you know, great celebration, but it has its own unique challenges as well. But she's gone okay. The next one down, he's a bit of a high wire act, and the young bloke is he's in, yeah, my son's 14 in year 8, and he's missed his sport, and the connections that come through that, you know, my wife's found it pretty tough at times. I've been lucky in that. I guess what I do is very, very purposeful. You know, it's just so much to do every day. So you just got to get on with it the best way you can. But, you know, we found it tough at times, like just about every Melburnian, Victorian.
It's hard to relate to in Tassie at the moment, isn't it, Shannon? So we've been really fortunate in that regard, but I can only imagine the challenges you've had during this tough period. Sorry, Shannon.
Yeah, no, like, you're spot on, mate. We've been so blessed here in Tassie. We don't appreciate, well, you do to a degree, that the efforts that you guys have gone through. Like, I literally flew to Brisbane yesterday to get my visa done for a particular holiday, and when you're in the guts of it and you're wearing masks and all this, which is completely foreign, it's strange. So to be in it for 100 days, is that where you're about?
Oh, well, this latest iteration, yeah.
It's like I could not imagine what that would do to your mind space anyway.
Yeah, and last year, I went, the AFL industry was basically relocated to Queensland. I went for 7 days and stayed for 107. So my wife had to do the whole thing by herself. You know, which is very tough. But, you know, I think the toughest period has been the last month, to be honest, because, you know, I think we've taken great pride in the fact the sacrifices are counting, they're working, and we've seen the numbers go down and get under control. Yeah. But now, notwithstanding all the sacrifices we're making as a community, as citizens, we're just seeing it now just out of control, and it will be. I mean, zero COVID's gone. We've just got to lean into it, and so it's a bit despairing, if you know what I mean.
I guess not only on that, Brendan, you've got your family, but you've also been the CEO of a football club and a big operation there. You've got a lot of other young men that you need to make sure that they're in a good mental health space. you know, their families are well supported and everything as well. So you've got that added challenge in front of you as well.
Yeah.
What sort of networks do you put in place at a football club for these young guys to deal with that?
Oh, well, you know, we've got young men and young women. Our women are just about to ramp up and into the season, which has been pushed back. I mean, the first thing we have, I guess, is we've got each other and we've got the program. And, yep. You know, there's a lot of predictability, certainty, regimentation about footy, elite sporting performance, elite sport programs. And a lot of athletes find comfort in that. So you've got the program and you've got each other. And at various stages, you know, that's been taken away. We've got to train in small groups and we can't sit in team meetings and you can't have social activities and the like. So that first line of defense has been taken away. So they've got different family circumstances, arrangements. So, you know, I just think we keep sort of preaching and telling each other that, you know, perspective has never been more important. Perspective is, you know, everything can be taken away, everything, except our ability to choose how we respond to a set of circumstances. That's perspective. And perspective is that this will pass at some stage. There will be vaccinations. There are people worse off than us. We do have our jobs. We still can support our livelihoods and families. Yeah. And to have gratitude as well. So, but the fact is it is hard and we don't expect young athletes to start members just bottle it up and just say, you know, just get on with it, stiff upper lip. It's hard. It's okay for you to reveal that and talk about how hard it is and you know, draw comfort and strength from each other. So it's just an ongoing process.
Yeah, I can imagine, I can't imagine what it would have been like, I guess, if we were confronted with something like this. You know, started your AFL journey in 1990. I guess I think we've got a little bit better as society about talking about our feelings, especially as men. I think there's a long way to go, but I think we've obviously mental health has come to the forefront in recent years, I guess, more than anything, and people are a lot more open about that. I think that's probably helping us all navigate through it a little bit more.
Definitely, and it's an area where we've, you know, I'd like to think we do pretty well. I mean, if you come into our football club, you know, we've got monitors all throughout the facility and on that. What is the training program? You know, it's just broken down into the day, broken down like a lesson plan, like a class, school,
yep,
timetable. And in that, you know, you've got your skills, your weights, your opposition analysis, all the stuff. But in that, institutionalizing that program on a daily basis is what we call peak performance. So peak performance is all about mental skill development. And a real key part of that for us has been helping players, you know, when they come into our environment, understand who they are, and have the courage to and confidence to be who they are, because you know, I mean, you guys have been around sporting environments, even workplaces, whatever. You know, at the end of the day, as humans, we want connection and we want to feel as though we belong. And so at various stages, say in footy clubs, that's, you know, guys feel as they have to fit in and act a certain way or, you know, wear particular clothes or respond, yep, to certain things and different, you know. And so sometimes that, if there's an inconsistency between who you are and what you're trying to be, sometimes that there's tension. And so I guess what we're trying to say is the first line of defense of being mentally healthy is understanding self, of valuing self, of self-love, because when you're proud to be and you can come to work every day and be yourself, I mean, you're more likely to be at your best physically and, yep, mentally. And also, when you are yourself and present yourself to others truly and authentically and vulnerably, you know, talk about your thoughts and feelings and concerns and doubts, that's where that draws connection.
Yep.
And connection builds trust, and trust is the bedrock of teams. So I think that's an approach we've really worked hard in cultivating it, and it, you know, it doesn't guarantee anything, but it puts our guys in a pretty good space, hopefully, most of the time.
I think a big piece of what you just spoke about from an outsider is what Trent Cotchin bought as a young man. So he had a pretty solid sense of self. That's how I read it. And he was able to have a leadership role early on because he was so strong within himself. And if you look at the journey that I reckon the Tigers have had, that's their key people to have in your club. And you know, that's the way I read it.
Well, it's a really interesting observation, Shannon, because he was captain at 22. And he, at 22, he probably didn't have a good understanding of what it took to be a leader. And so I think for a few years there, to be a leader, he meant I've just got to, you know, kicks, marks, handballs. I've got to be the perfect guy. I've just got to be and you know, in some ways, he probably wasn't leading that well. And the team probably mirrored that. And so, but it was that journey and going, particularly we had a tough year in 2016 where he turned the mirror on all of us, that he thought, you know, to be a really, to be an effective leader, I've got to be myself, and I'm not perfect. I've got shortcomings, and I've got doubts, and I've got fears, and yep. I've got things I'm probably ashamed of that I would never want to reveal. But guess that's me. That's what makes us humans. And so once he sort of landed that place, and you know, we put in place an environment which helped him discover, and it went through the place like dominoes. If you ever get a chance, there's a great TED Talk clip. It goes for 12 minutes, and it's by Dr. Brené Brown, and it's on leadership and vulnerability. And I saw that, and I had one of those epiphanies of, that's it. That's what's been wrong about sporting environments of footy clubs, and that's the way forward. I remember I drove home from work. I bought two of her books on the way home, read them over the weekend. Yeah. And you know, I'd recommend, you know, guys learning about, you know, coming to terms with who you are and the strength and leadership that comes from authenticity and vulnerability. They're incredible. Dr. Brené Brown.
These are the nuggets of gold that we love pulling out of these and our podcast. Like we're not a big podcast by any stretch, but this is exactly precisely why we've done it. So yeah, we'll share that on our socials.
I heard you talk in an interview. I'm not sure when the interview was recorded, Brendan, but you talked about, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the University of football. I think you talked about, or whether it was the University of AFL, but you talked about and it reminded me about what you just said, and a lot of those lessons that you've learned along the way through a football club environment, they are things that we can take back to home, aren't they? They're things that we can teach our kids.
Yeah, I think I know what you're referring to. And look, I'm lucky enough to be relatively well educated. That's great. You know, Australia can provide those opportunities, which is great. But I've learned more, infinitely more, in what I describe as the university of football. Call it, you know, university. It's life on. Gone nuclear, I reckon, AFL footy. But the key lesson you learn is the importance of honest self-reflection, evaluation. Because if you don't perform well, and you make excuses, or you know blame someone else, or you know didn't kick the ball or whatever, you won't improve, and gradually you'll just get weeded out of the system. But if you have an open mind and maybe even an open heart and are committed to self-improvement and honest evaluation assessment, well, you should get better. And you should get and so I think, you know, one of the great things about you know, elite sporting performance is there's nowhere to hide. You're on the rack. So it demands honesty. And so that's something I really take to my kids, just demand honesty and don't make excuses. And there's no shame in failing and losing. And sometimes it's those failures. They're the most teachable moments, the most powerful moments. So, but as long as you embrace them openly and fully, there's no shame in that.
Coming through the University of Footy in the 90s must have been a different place to the university that you see now.
Yeah, look, it is. It is. It, you know, when I started, I was drafted as a young kid out of Tassie. You know,
Bernie Hawks, I read.
Bernie Hawks. Yeah, first year of Bernie Hawks, first year. Really? I'd had a year of uni. I played the Hawks. I come over here. I just worked in an office for 18 months before I went back to uni. Most guys worked. They were plumbers. Mm. Yep. Or they're teachers, yep. Or they worked in banks. They'd go to training at 4 o'clock every day and play footy. So you weren't defined by your athletic performance. You didn't have that athletic identity. You know, you had other demands on your time, other peer groups, other skills. Whereas I reckon into the late 90s and 2000s, as the game evolved to become quasi-professional or full-time professional, you know, it was all in. You know what I mean? It was all in, yeah. and guys, I guess, weren't getting the opportunities to develop other parts of their life. And so when the footy wasn't going that well, everything's gone to shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
So, and it's funny, as professional and as commercial as the game is now, I reckon 3 or 4 years ago, we decided to just wind it back. We're just taking ourselves too seriously. We're spending too much time at the club doing unproductive things. We actually took from 16 into 17, so 17 we won. We took, I think, like 2 hours out of the training calendar a week, which is pretty big. We actually went backwards.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Just freed things up. And I think COVID, even more so, COVID is just, you know what, guys? Just don't sweat the small stuff. You know, what are the big rocks? What are the big forces? What are its relationships, its connection, its family? This stuff here, it really doesn't matter. You know, let's just get on with it.
That what you just talked about, family and so forth, as a high-end operator, how do you make, like, footy's a weekend thing. Obviously, it's an all-week thing, but it's all performed on the weekend. How do you make, over a long period of time, your kids feel valued and that they're number one over weekends when, you know, they probably want to be out playing footy or hockey or netball or whatever it is they might do. How do you make time for that?
Well, Shannon, it's really hard. And it's not a weekend thing. It's a 7 day a week thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Monday to Friday, I'm working big weeks. And then, you know, someone said it the other day, is it a lifestyle? It's not a lifestyle. It's a cause. You've got the 24/7 media, you know, you've got to be across that to some extent, and you do get sucked into a little bit anyway. Then you've got, you know, week you're playing Saturday, you've got functions, you've got engaging sponsors, broadcast, government stuff. It's just, so I'm not complaining. I'm very grateful for the job I do, but it's really, really hard. And to make, when I come home and there's distractions, like I do things like, you know, I just sometimes sit in my car for a minute or two. You know, I got phone calls going, just sit in my car, compose myself. And that's the separation. That's the demarcation. I go home. I try and give quality. I do a lot of mindfulness meditation. I settle the mind down a lot. So it's hard. But having said that, you know, before I started Sydney Footy Administration, I worked in commercial law for a few years. And I say that because one of the positives about my job is I can share my work with my kids. You know, we play in Collingwood at the MCG. My family's there. Now I'm hosting and but they're with me and they can see me and they can share the highs and lows. They can see me on best and meet my work. They can meet the Prime Minister. They can meet Billy Bloggs. They get those sorts of opportunities as well, you know. So, there's a lot of benefits, but there are challenges. But they're all of my making. They're things that I can manage, and that's a work in progress.
As you just touched on about that work life balance, do you manage to find time for yourself? Yeah,
I do.
Because that's important as well, isn't it? It's important that if we as dads can find time for ourselves. And
I do. Because you've got to keep yourself. You've got to keep yourself in good shape, physically and mentally, emotionally. You've got to keep yourself balanced. You've got to be mindful. And if you're off or you're out of balance, everything that, yeah. And that's you know, that's been reinforced through COVID. And the thing I do, it's one of my big rocks that I have to do, is that I've become an ocean swimmer and a cold water swimmer. So, you know, I'm not too far from the bay, but most mornings I'll go and swim all through winter.
Yeah, right.
There's a group of us, and we go out, and you know, it's dark. You swim with them. You know, wear a little rubber hat because it's freezing. But
you know, what about the budgie smugglers? Do you wear budgie smugglers?
I wear budgies. Yeah, but
you're a good man, better man than me.
Yeah, yeah. That's sort of my time. That's my you know, it's my therapy. No one's talking. No one's. You just swim and you just think and you clear your head and there's something really invigorating about the cold water and. I do it probably 4 or 5 mornings a week. When I don't do it, I just feel it. I feel it, you know, like this morning we had a just incredible swim. This morning it was just beautiful.
You're a bit of a surfer from way back as well, Brandon.
I love my surfing, Nathan, but from here, it's an hour and a half, you know. But mate, we've been locked in our 5K zone for months, so I can't.
Yeah, hard to get out. It's funny when I When you'd agreed to come on the podcast, I did what everybody does. I did an Instagram stalk.
Is that the go?
Yeah, so that's a go, I think, mate. And I noticed there was a few on there about the swimming and the surfing on there. But out of all the photos you said on there, and you touched on before about you know, your kids getting the opportunity to meet prime ministers, and there's some pretty amazing. Shannon, if you get a chance, have a look at Brendan's Instagram page. It's quite it's very impressive. It's making mine look very average, I can tell you that. There's some global sporting celebrities. There's some great moments there with your family after your victories at Richmond. But there's one photo, mate, that I need to ask you about, and I'll kick myself if I don't after getting off. I'm a big Nick Kaye fan.
Yeah.
And I'm scrolling down, and I see this photo caught my eye, and it's quite a distinctive-looking guy, and he's Warren Ellis sitting on the couch with you. And I look across a little bit further, and Tex Perkins is sitting in the middle. Along a little bit further, he's a great man, Nick Kaye himself, sitting on the couch. Mate, how does a boy from Burnie end up on the couch with Nick Kaye?
Oh, look, I love my music, and it's funny, mate. Ben Northey is a conductor of the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra. Right. And he's John Suber Northey's nephew.
Yeah. Right.
You know, the Symphony Orchestra, the MSO, is as highbrow as it comes, you know. But he's a steak and eggs, rank and file footy. Just love. He's from Ballarat. Loves the Tigers.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I've become a friend of Ben's, and the MSO performed with Nick Cave and Warren Ellis. Their film music. There's a lot of their soundtracks a few years ago. It was.
Yep.
And my wife and I went, and it was just one of those most memorable experiences. It was just incredible.
Yeah.
And Ben said, come backstage and meet the guys. I felt like a bit of a flog, but I thought, oh, no, I'm doing it.
Oh, mate, you've got to grab that opportunity.
So we went and had a good chat, and then Warren came to the footy. He'd never been to the MCG. And,
wow.
And so since then we've kept in contact. He's based in Paris. He sends me photos with his Richmond scarf on. He's become a Tiger. But not long after that, I think it was the next year, they performed at the Sydney Opera House. Same show with the Sydney Symphony. And I'd never been to the Opera House, so he said come up. So we went backstage again, had a drink, and they're all there. Tex actually sat with us. He's a guest, and I said, guys, I can't
leave without asking
for a photo. So.
certainly can't blame you there.
I did the whole fanboy thing, mate. It was
mate, you'd be mad not to.
Did you tell them about your work with Troll by Video and Mark Zanotti?
I let that one through the keeper, Shannon.
But just going back a little bit, Brendan, if I could, going back to growing up and playing football as a young guy. Now, your grandfather played at Richmond. Your dad was an All-Australian. Obviously, Michael got drafted to Fitzroy, maybe, a year prior to you?
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure.
Two years, in fact.
2 years prior to you. So was there that level of expectation as a young kid growing up? There must have been a little – was there any external expectation?
No, there
or?
Really wasn't.
Yeah, right.
Hand on heart. I love footy. It's all we did. You know, surfing, surfer saving, cricket, footy. I mean, you know the deal, growing up on the coast. And I loved it. But and when I think about it, you know, I would have spent thousands of hours with Michael, you know, on they'd call it skill development now, but just kicking the foot in the street.
Yep.
Dad never would never push us or encourage us. In fact, you know, Dad's always working. They're always So, and it seemed back then, footy, VFL footy seemed just so remote. You know, it was that Bass Strait was a big barrier, and we'd get a quarter of footy a week, and you might see Carlton or Richmond or Collingwood or someone. But my footy heroes were my local heroes. And that, you know, the Penguin Blues, and that was the extent of it. But we're obviously pretty good at it.
Yeah.
But when Michael sort of, you know, went to the next level, you know, I was at uni, first year uni, I was tearing campus up, just having the time of life. Then I thought, gee, you know, I'll knuckle down. And so when I came back from the first year of uni, Bernie Hawkes entered the league and Colin Robinson come back as captain and Warren McCarthy was a coach. And I thought, you know what? Time to knuckle down. And so there wasn't the expectation, but once Michael played and established himself at Fitzroy, he was the one who blazed the trail. And it just sort of in mind, look, I play with guys growing up that are more talented than me.
There's a competitive area across the coast. Like if you look at that sort of era, that sort of 85 through to the 90, 91, there was a lot of players came from out of the coast, you know, your Atkins boys, Bondi, Richo.
Oh, Ricky, there's a bunch out of Wynyard. There's a bunch out of Wynyard.
Yeah, there was.
I reckon the first, I saw a stat, maybe the first 3 years of the national draft, there might have been something like 40 players taken out of Tasmania. Wow. And a lot of those from the Northwest. So, you know, it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of commitment and it takes a lot of resilience and it takes someone to inspire you. And that was my brother. And
And sometimes it just takes one person.
It takes one person.
We've had a really good example of that lately, Brendan, with Shannon's taking on a young guy from Wynyard High School. Shannon's got a property maintenance business and had a young guy there who's, they put him into a position to work, to tag along with Shannon, a bit of work experience just to get some. He's probably one of those kids that's he's probably not going to go through university, but he's really good with his hands and really wants to get involved, really wants to be a boilermaker welder. And Shannon took him on as a work experience kid for a few weeks, and he became a bit of a, with the podcast we mentioned him most weeks, he's become a bit of a local celebrity, this young fella. And so the guy's stopping Shannon and they talk to him and he's wondering, what are you talking to me for? But anyway, we put something out there on our Facebook group. I know Shannon's been doing a lot of work. And anyway, this young kid's got an apprenticeship that he starts next year. And he will look back one day and Shannon was that person.
Yeah.
And I think it's just an example of how important it is, you know, and it might be your dad or your uncle or your brother, or it might be Joe Blow down the road, but it's so important for young men to have that one person. And sometimes it's a game changer, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It is. And sometimes, sometimes you don't get feedback and sometimes you don't think you're having much of an impact, but in the fullness of time, because yourself and young blokes can be reserved and hold back. But I remember, and it doesn't take much. As a young kid, in Penguin, we lived near the golf course. And I took up golf and, you know, just go whack the three or four clubs and, and most guys would play golf and hit the bar and, you know, getting the beers and stuff. But there was, and I was only young, 12 or 13, but there was this other guy that was a bit different. And he said, come on, let's go and play nine more holes and I'll show you this and I'll show you that. He didn't have to do that. It just encouraged me a bit more and, you know, I wanted to get a bit better and, you know, I got to cut more clubs and, you know, get a full, you know what I mean? Just when I look back now, I thought it was a small thing, but he didn't have to do that. But a little bit of belief in you, you know.
I've got one question, mate. So every week we do a dad hack. We generally present a dad's joke and a bit of an edgy joke. We won't do that today, but we get a dad hack. So we had Kurt Gidley, the NRL superstar, on here probably 5 weeks ago, and he came up with the best dad hack that any of us have. Where he said, if you take your girls swimming, take loose pants to put on afterwards because you can't get tights on wet legs. So that was a great little sort of tip about being a dad. Is there anything that you can think off the top of your head that over the journey you've done that's made your life just slightly easier as a dad?
Well, I'll give you, in fact, I got a tip from someone the other day, which I'll share, and I've actually used it.
Great.
So I've got a 14-year-old son. He's spent most, he's in year eight. It's an active time, young boys, you know, growing in sport, and that's all been taken away from me. So we've set up a little, got an exercise bike, and I've got a, you know, rowing machine, and we try and get out and do some stuff, you know, try and do something every day. But here's me. I've been saying, all right, this is what we're going to do, and here's the circuit, and this and this. And you know, I'm not getting the enthusiasm I'm looking for, so I'm getting crankier. So come on, mate, get off your ass and get off those games at Fortnite. But someone said, let him design it. Let him design it. Let him design. What do you want to do? Let's design a program. And the other then you know, got the music blaring away. I got the music. You know, I got, you know, bad seeds or something, all this stuff. He said, make a playlist for the kid.
Let him design.
So when it's just you co-design the, you know, little Spotify playlist. Comes up with these tunes. Now, some aren't listenable. Obviously, it's a mother this, mother that. You know, it's sort of a.
Yeah.
I think of a drive-by shooting in LA or something. But you know what I mean? It's we so the default position. I start telling him what's good for him instead of saying, "Man, what are you? Let's co-author it. Let's work on it together."
Bit of ownership on it. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. That's great. Do you have any? I suppose, like any dad, have some challenges with the mobile phones and the technology and that with the kids that nowadays. Do you have any sort of set rituals at home that you stick to? Like, is it might be a dinner time that there's no phones or is anything that?
Nothing at dinner time. Yeah, we try and last night we sit around the table. You know, two or three nights a week we try and actually get around a table.
Yeah, it's important, isn't it?
Particularly. Yeah. You know, COVID's been good like that because I'm not coming out from work at 7 o'clock or 6:30, and the kids. So we're here, we can eat together.
Yeah.
Gee, the technology, Nathan, I've found really hard because the young guy particularly, there's no other means of communicating.
Yeah.
You don't want to isolate them either, do you?
So it's local tennis. This is the level it gets to. The local skateboard park. They've put massive big bollards. The crates just dropped in there, so kids can't use it. Like the local primary school here with basketball rings, the hoops have been taken down. I mean, it's just it's almost penal. So how else do they? So it's got.
Yeah.
We just have to let it go. And plus, everything's delivered online anyway. You know, all this online schooling, and I mean, kids are doing 8:30 to 3:30 on. Line.
It's a hard thing to police, isn't it? Almost mate. We know you're a busy man, Brendan. I could sit here and talk to you for another hour. There's so many topics. I had a list of things I want to talk to you about, but mate, we just appreciate your time so much and your generosity. When I spoke to you on the phone yesterday, you were really receptive about what we're doing, and you wanted to be involved, and we can't thank you enough. We wish you all the best for the. Hopefully for this lockdown that's not going to go for too much longer. We wish you and the family all the best there. Wish Richmond all the best, mate. I think there's another few chapters left in that story. I'm a Collingwood supporter. It pains me to say it, but you're certainly still in the window seat there, so I think there's some more good times to come. But, Brendan,
thanks, Nathan.
Thanks very much for joining us today, mate. You're a champion, and we really appreciate your
thanks,
time.
Thanks, Nathan. Thanks, Shannon. All the best, guys.
Please subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on and leave a review. Please be nice.
Thank you for listening to Better Off Dad.